This is Iconic.
Welcome to Iconic, where we talk about all things 13th Age. I'm your host, JM, and with me as always are Nick and Becca and Mark.
Hey.
Hello.
Howdy.
We got a great episode for you this week. We are doing a random encounter, our first of season four, as opposed to doing a bunch of smaller adventures that make up the larger campaign arc like we did last season. What we're going to do is we're going to outline a campaign over three sessions. We're going to do the adventurer tier, the champion tier, and sort of the epic tier, and kind of talk about how we would do this campaign, kind of, again, as with all of our random encounters, work collaboratively to sort of flesh out a arc that you then can just take and drop in your campaign as a way to kind of start it off and or kind of provide the campaign framework for a whole 13th Age adventure. So kind of our guidelines for this is we're looking at the Undead campaign that we sort of started talking about in episode 3 and 4, kind of our ideas that we had when we were looking at the Necromancer and the Undead Monsters, sort of our Undead Outbreak, if you will. And this will be the Adventurer tier, sort of the intro to this idea of the undead as the major threat of a campaign. So before we get into setup or kind of opening scenes, discussing what's going on in the adventure tier, what are your guys' thoughts? I know we had a lot of ideas kind of going back in those previous two episodes. If we're sitting down with our players and we want to sort of narrow back our icons, what are the ones that sort of you would want to say, hey guys, we're going to make these the primary icons, whether we're doing a 7-icon campaign or a limited campaign, trying to narrow our players' focus for the arc to come. So Intanar, Mark brought up Demoloth. Any other ones that you would say, hey, these are ones that I'd really want to highlight?
I would probably also bring in the host, Intanar. You notice as those positive, the pantheon of the gods, you know, as creatures or as people are dying and coming back, it's going to have an impact on the celestial beings as well. Maybe some of the gods are becoming more powerful because as these people are coming back as undead, they're continuing to worship them. And so maybe some of the gods that have been waning in power are suddenly waxing strong, or vice versa.
I think in both Tanar and in the Dragon Empire, I would look at some of the lost icons or forgotten icons and their desire to return. And I might ask that everybody have at least one negative relationship with one of those lost icons. In Tanar, someone we haven't really talked about a lot, but who is kind of lurking outside is Zenhir, the Lich Dragon, or the Dragon Lich. And in Tanar, there are no dragons that you know of, and so then this idea that this icon wants to return could be a focus for the undead coming in. In the Dragon Empire, I mean, the source books that are out there by Pelgrane give a lot of those lost icons, one of which is the Great Ghoul. And so kind of giving that idea of, as Mark was kind of looking at the big bad icon, like what is fueling this, I would want everybody to have a negative relationship with something that isn't really on stage quite yet, but maybe could potentially be if the adventurers, you know, screw everything up.
Adventurers don't screw everything up.
Okay, if they go in the direction that you don't expect them to go and you haven't planned for them to go.
Do you think that would telegraph maybe too much? Or would you want to maybe bring in that sort of, all right, you all now have a negative relationship with this icon as maybe a transition point out of adventurer into champion?
Maybe something like that. But yeah, like at least as a GM to know that there's this lost icon that has the potential to return unless the adventurers stop it.
What if they don't?
Yeah, maybe going from adventurer to champion, going, okay, now that you guys have reached this level and you've interfered enough, you now all have a negative relationship with this icon because now it's noticing you.
But does it have to be negative? Necromancer could have a positive and say, you know what? If you help me, Mr. Necromancer, you could be the next Archmage.
Sweet. So you're going to encourage parties to turn in on each other?
Oh, well, maybe disguise the whole party into helping replace an icon.
And it's pretty common to have players with having same icons but different relationships with it. And so maybe it would be better to have just introduce, here's a new lost icon. I want everybody to have a relationship with this and let the players choose what sort of stance they're going to have, either for or against it, and kind of see what happens.
And if this icon is, in theory, a negative icon or an evil icon or a bad icon or however you want to define it, yeah, you shouldn't have your players have a positive relationship with it.
Yeah, maybe that's a better way to put it.
Yeah, you could go conflicted, though.
You definitely could go conflicted. Well, Mark, what about for you? Is there any other icons that you would want to bring into this, or...
For Tanara, I had the Empress, the Rivener, and the Spell Queen. Spell Queen fought Demoloth the first time. She's probably concerned about something that's happening. In the Dragon Empire, it's very obvious the Lich King should be in there somewhere. The Priestess, the Emperor. And I also like the Crusader. It's the perfect army. Don't have to feed them. They go, go, go. And if they're fighting demons, I'm okay with it. He does kind of work for the Dark Gods, so.
I had the Crusader on my list for the Dragon Empire as well. Just kind of one of those kind of middle-of-the-road icons that you could push in either direction, and it'd be interesting to see in which direction the player's choices would end up pushing him.
Do you think there are any icons that you would encourage your players to stay away from?
Ooh, that's a good question. I think for me, if we were in the Dragon Empire, I probably wouldn't suggest that they, go with like the Orc Lord, just from the way I would, if we're wanting the undead to sort of be the bad, the big bad of the campaign, I would definitely say maybe strip out some of those other negative icons that tend to become like the focus of an enmity, or tend to be they're all campaign level icons, right? So like if you pull out the Orc Lord, maybe reduce the role of the demonologist. Those are the two that kind of come to mind to kind of make sure that the Lich King stays highly focused. And the same thing in Tanar. I wouldn't include things like the Black Duke, or maybe necessarily even the perversions of Shadow's Reach. I would definitely want to keep the focus on Demoloth or the Lich King. What about you guys?
I would probably, in kind of the same vein of wanting to keep it focused on the undead, I would probably exclude the Diabolist and just not really delve too much with the demon devil issues. And then for Tanar, I also was thinking that I probably would leave the perversions out of it.
Right, because there's nothing that says, right, especially in 13th Age, where there's so much player choice and so much player freedom and so much player, pushback agency on the narrative and agency, creating limited space can increase creativity, right? The more choices we have, the broader the pool, if you will. And right, the 13th Age core rulebook says talk with your GM, see if they've got anything that's limited. And kind of going into that, are there any class restrictions or focuses that you would put on this campaign, again, to kind of try and narrow the focus of what's going on?
I said I would actually probably restrict the necromancer class, because if I'm thinking my big bad is somebody who's raising the dead, I would want that to kind of be one of those classes that heroes don't dabble with.
Mm-hmm. I saw that and I liked that. I hadn't thought about that one. There were several that I was like, well, in a game like this, I might try and downplay certain things. But the necromancer and the demonologist really come to mind. If we're going to go down the dark route of the undead as this massive terror in the world, I would take out some of the more ambiguous classes, because I would want it to focus on the heroes or the heroic.
So I might restrict the necromancer, the demonologist, the warlock gets a little funny. So, depending on who's playing it and what they're doing with it. But some of those darker classes, And just because I do want the folks to be undead rising is a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
Let's not try to get into the moralities of it and start arguing with our necromancer and our party about why what they're doing is wrong or why what they're doing is okay, but what that person's doing is not okay, and just kind of try to keep it more black and white.
What about you guys? Any thoughts on that, Mark or Nick?
Yeah, I had initially toyed with the idea of excluding some of the, what I would consider some of the lighter classes, some of the ones that are leaned more kind of more naturally toward a bit more of a jovial aspect or cracking jokes and that sort of stuff, kind of keep that mid-range tension going the entire time. And so I was thinking about maybe excluding the bard, but at the same time, I realized that it's not just me sitting at the table running this game. It's that we're all playing this together. And as much as I want to make sure I'm crafting the world and crafting the scenario in such a way that it does facilitate everyone having fun, I also want the players to be able to kind of run things the direction that they want to go too. And so, you know, if they do want to have that more of a lighter feel to all of it, and they do want to kind of have the ability to break some of that tension, maybe I should allow that. So the conclusion I came to about putting restrictions on classes, I figured I'd just say, no, let the players make their choices and see how that affects the overall tone of the game.
I was about to say, if you're thinking about whether or not to let or to help the players break the tension, Joss Whedon is known as saying, make it dark, make it heavy, make it mean something, and then crack a joke. And in a lot of his production things that he's done, that's what it is. It's dark, it's heavy, it makes you think, and then you giggle a little, and it helps make it memorable.
And I think that's a great tool for GMs to keep in their back pocket. You know, you have to be mindful of the tension, and you have to be willing to break it at the appropriate time. And if you've got a player who they've in their mind, they've created that character to always be cracking jokes, then you're not going to have the opportunity to even bring up that tension. And some of that is character choices. And some of that is that conversation you have with the player. But I figured I'd just let it run and let the players choose whatever characters they wanted to. And then if it becomes an issue, have that conversation with the players outside of the game.
But that brings up a good point, because not all players are right for all campaigns, and that's okay. You might have a player who's not going to enjoy this style of game, or any style of game, whether it's 13th Age or World of Darkness, and they just may not be a good fit for that, either because they don't like that style of game, or they don't, they're not going to be necessarily as focused or as engaged with the themes or the tensions that you're trying to bring up. And again, that's totally fine. Like, you should be able to talk with your players about, hey, this is the kind of game I'm running. If you're trying to run a serious game and you have somebody who just cracks jokes nonstop, have a conversation with them. And if they're like, well, I don't know that I want to participate in that, that's fine. Not all gamers in a gaming group have to participate in all games that gaming group plays with. All right, so stepping into our venture tier idea, where would you start this game off? I kind of said that if I was going to start it in Tanar, I'd set it in Grey Tomb, this necropolis. It's sort of perfectly themed for this sort of thing, right? The priests of Aerolith kind of keep the dead bound, and by default, this would cause it not to be bound anymore. But if I were in the Dragon Empire, I'd start in that bright and happy city of Glitterhagen and then burn it to the ground with undead. What about you guys?
First of all, bright and happy city of Glitterhagen is not how I would describe that. But then again, I've only played in Glitterhagen in your game, and it was absolutely terrifying the entire time.
Well, you went to the dark side of Glitterhagen.
Sure, we went to a party, and it was still terrifying.
Not a lot of glitter, whole lot of Hagen.
But for myself, I probably wouldn't start it in one of the big cities. I would start it in a smaller town, somewhere that means something to the adventurers. Maybe it is their hometown or somewhere they are visiting that could be outside of Grey Tomb that gets overrun by the undead, and it makes it much more intimate and personal for the adventurers from the get-go.
Yeah, I agree with that. I would want to make sure that there's a good emotional connection from the players to whatever the location is at the beginning. And an easy way of doing that is to run through some of the examples given in Shards of the Broken Sky, where you effectively do kind of a montage of, well, who did you meet here? You know, why do you have this connection here? But I probably would go also with more of a small town setting, small town feel, or maybe have them be summoned somewhere to interact with an icon or a representative of an icon. I probably wouldn't go too big with the city right out of the gate.
Yeah, me neither. It was going to be either a small town or just on the road, like a trade route, and something happens and you're there to help, not in a city yet. Mm-hmm. Eventually, they'll get to the city.
Interesting.
Or if you do have it outside of, say, Grey Tomb, or in a small town that gets overrun by the undead, you're going to end up going to the necropolis and going, yo, what did you do wrong? Why is this happening?
All right, well, let's start off with that idea then. Let's start off with it being in a small town or along the road. What is that iconic opening going to be? Something that I really liked the idea of doing is using the rules from Martin Kilman's dark alleys and
twisted paths.
Thank you. Dark alleys and twisted path, and using the zero level hero rules to kind of start off, to kind of ramp up that tension of the undead as a threat. You're not even really fully a hero yet. You're sort of this intermediate space between a class, you know, a class and just like somebody else in the caravan or someone else in the town.
I also definitely see that as even doing it with like four very small level zero encounters, so that each hero or to be hero kind of establishes how they are going to fight. And then they all come together in order to suppress what is happening in all these different places.
I like that idea a lot.
It would help to highlight each individual player and how they are going to interact with the undead.
Yeah, I was initially thinking of having them be summoned to talk to someone who would tell them about the threat, and then have there be some sort of emotional hook to reveal that the severity of it. But I like that running them through level zero sessions and then have some sort of encounter where they realize, oh, this is actually what's going on. And now we are heroes and now we can deal with that.
Yep, I like it.
All right, so what is that kind of iconic starting scene? Mark and Becca, you're spinning out of Becca's idea from the undead monsters. You wanna
where the fog rolls in and people get snatched by fast zombies and skeletons who have risen from the grave.
Right, and the fog rolls in and you turn and you see your friend isn't there anymore, and you call out to them and you see a shape walking towards you and you're like, oh, Bob, I'm so glad you're okay. You're not Bob and you're trying to eat my face now. Okay.
Roll initiative, Bob.
That's right.
Right?
I like that idea of that kind of, like, I originally was thinking like a graveyard overrun, but I do love the idea of that kind of gothic fog rolling in and the monsters are coming with them. And that's where the terror kind of breaks out. People are panicking. People are scattering. If we go with your idea, I believe you were originally having it in the last episode about, or the last episode that we talked about this with, that they were on the trail in a caravan. I mean, that immediately gives you an initial encounter, and it gives you, crap, where did everyone else go? Okay, we'll circle the wagons. You go find these other people. So you have an immediate decision that they have to make. How do we survive? And then several other adventure encounters kind of, well, what happened? Who was taken where? What's going on? And they don't actually have to leave the circle of wagons that are, like, there's not enough people left to actually get the caravan going again. So we need to find these people.
Mm-hmm. And then it could lead into Nick's idea of being summoned by somebody that, you were in this caravan to go meet with this person. You get attacked. You have to find people and save people. And so by the time you roll up, this representative who's looking for people to handle this threat, you've already proven yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You're already involved. And now you can get the information to say, what is going on?
It's a little like our Pathfinder 2 Extinction Curse, where you are all members of the circus and something bad happens, and the mayor goes, hey, you dealt with that pretty handily. Can you help us with our thing? There's this idea of, hey, you've proven competence in a stressful situation. Why don't we have you deal with this larger thing? So, Mark, you said skeletons and zombies, fast skeletons and fast zombies, kind of as the monster for your establishing scene. Did anyone else have any other thoughts along those lines?
I really like the idea of that fog being a recurring theme, both as something that the players can go kind of chase down, and also whenever they hear reports of, oh, yeah, there was this weird cloud or there's this weird fog thing, mist going on, they kind of know where to target their focus. As I was processing through and thinking about what is this fog, what could this be coming from, and what actually might be going on, I was envisioning that maybe, you know, as we talked entered kind of our last campaign arc with the portal opening, that maybe now that portal's opened, this past dead civilization is emerging forth and having something be like an aquatic race that has figured out how to walk around on land, and it requires them to have this cloud of mist in order to breathe, but it's deadly to everyone else. And so I was initially thinking that those encounters that you'd have with the initial skeleton minions or zombies or what have you would be very alien. The skeletons would not be in shapes or forms or bone types that you're accustomed to seeing. And so it really would raise the question of okay, these are obviously undead, but what are these? Where are they coming from? Why are they here? Give some fodder for the players to do a little bit of investigation too.
So I guess my one question would be, do you think by introducing a whole new race of antagonists that you would, not to water down the threat of the undead with this brand new threat that is also kind of behind everything? Do you know what I'm saying?
Well, I was thinking that they were effectively the same thing. These are undead. And it's also
okay.
This incursion, if you will.
Okay.
You know, they're trying to make almost land break into a new region to establish a foothold, but they are undead. They're pouring forth out from the plains of dust and ash, or they're pouring forth out of whatever the death realm is. And you know, you have to stop them, because if they continue to progress, they're going to eventually take over the entire land, killing everyone along the way. That was kind of in my mind that the big threat for this adventure arc is these undead are trying to establish themselves as part of this incursion, and then that could potentially be taken into a future tiers as well, as that just ends up escalating.
Okay.
So even if we don't do aquatic undead or amphibious undead, I still like the idea of the fog being a hamper to any battles or even any exploration. And while in 13th Age we don't track light sources, requiring the players to come up with ways in order to see through the fog, or even if it is too hard or even toxic to breathe, like, how are they going to deal with this?
Mm-hmm.
Because if they can deal with this, it doesn't mean the everyday NPC can deal with it.
Right. It would be a good spot for background checks or icon relationships to come into play, but also mm-hmm. using the fog as a terrain effect
mm-hmm.
Kind of provides interesting ways. Maybe at first, I mean, it's always going to be a signal of whatever is really going on. But I could definitely see sort of the group, like the adventure arc really is dealing with the immediate threats that this undead incursion or outbreak is causing, right? Graveyards are emptying. There's mer people, skeletons sort of flooding the land. Where's the fog at now? We've dealt with it here, but the fog is continuing to move across the land. As they sort of get through the adventure tier, start to figure out what's going on, right? Because that's really, I sort of see almost the adventurer tier as being very reactionary, right? That's sort of kind of one of the themes in all of the good sort of horror movies about undead, is that initially you're just trying to survive and figure out what's going on. So let's talk about that. What is going on? What are kind of some of our ideas for what could be going on behind the scenes as what is causing these undead outbreaks? Mark, what are your thoughts?
With kind of the ideas I had, it's recruitment. That's how they build their army, by turning these people into undead. Maybe there's, and depending where you, as you continue with this, kind of right at the cusp of champion, they're giving it to your vampire spawn to drain, turn them into more undead, and you're there to try to maybe stop that ritual from happening. I would also use this to throw back to the fog. As they get to the next bigger town and they're trying to explain what's happening and the fog rolls in, that little cry wolf where the fog rolls in and nothing happens, but the players are freaked out and they're trying to rally defense and this is going to happen and this is horrible and nothing happens. And people are like, okay, yeah, we believe you. And then of course later it will happen. But at that moment, you know, not every time the fog rolls in, undead appear, just to throw them off, just to make the players work with trying to push forward what they've discovered and convince people the dead are rising. Like, are you sure?
Yeah. So as they kind of move into the more established cities, they run into resistance of people who think this is actually going on.
Yes, yes. Especially if you say it's like a port city where fog happens all the time. They're like, oh no, that happens every night. And then one night, it, you know, while you're out, it happens. So, yeah. But basically, though, is they're recruiting. One of the big tropes of undead is how do you defeat them? Because as people die, they just become part of the new army. They get risen. You know, people raise them up or turn them into, you know, ghoul minions or vampire minions. That was what I had. That was my idea. And that might be the end of the, you know, your adventure tier fight is to stop that ritual. So they haven't immediately kill, as we're used to, where zombies and skeletons are just killing people. They're capturing them and taking them somewhere.
Becca and Nick, what are your thoughts on, I mean, Nick, you kind of said that this portal is open and the dead civilization is returning.
They're trying to make a beachhead, if you will, in the land of the living to try to reestablish themselves in some way. The other idea I had was maybe that they're in a sense being chased out. Maybe there's something in the Plains of Dust and Ash that is terrifying them and kind of forcing them out in some way. Maybe something that brings about some sort of true death where they literally cease to exist.
My idea kind of bounces off of that, the dead have returned to warn the world of something. And whether that is in the Dragon Empire, the Great Ghoul returning, or this Dragon Lich returning in Tanar, but just that they've returned to tell the world, but they don't have the resources to actually like explain why they're there, and they don't see how they are hurting the living. And so if that idea is that they've been chased out and there's something else back there and we want to warn you guys about that, I just, you know, I'm a little too aggressive when I want to warn you and instead I rip at your heart. I'm so sorry about that.
Both of you guys are scary. Something that scares the undead is truly scary.
Yeah.
Right. And that's that tension, right? You start ratcheting that up in adventurer tier and you can really start pulling on it and leveraging it once you get to champion and epic.
So I like Becca's idea that there is a new sort of god of death, if you will, or icon of death, either the Great Ghoul or this Draco Lich, because it really kind of comes down to the undead still being kind of they're both messenger and enemy, right? If the Great Ghoul arises or if Zenhir kind of takes over, then they're all going to be bound under a new and worse master than they currently are now under, say, the Lich King or, the Lords of Death kind of in Tanar. So what happens if the heroes don't do anything? Like, in my mind, if the undead are just are if this fog is signaling the undead, and whether they're being taken for a ritual, which I like, Mark, like maybe someone's trying to co-opt it. Maybe that's our intermediate bad guy, that someone is like, look at all these undead. I can do something with this. I don't have to summon them. They're here. I just have to bind them somehow. So if the heroes don't do anything, then the land of the living is overrun by the dead in my mind. What are some other options?
If the heroes don't do anything, you're playing another game.
That's right. What is happening that is causing the heroes to have to be active at this point? Right? They can't, something has to happen that causes them to realize we can't just be reactionary. If we just keep reacting, we're just going to keep finding more and more dead that are being converted. We have to get ahead of this thing. So Becca, what is your...
Well, I was just thinking, if in Tanar, since we're usually focusing our adventures in this area of the Desolates, and to the north is the Empire, quite similar to the Dragon Empire, if the heroes flee the Desolates, the Empress is going to have to take control. And this is a time, even in the Dragon Empire, the 13th Age setting, where if the Emperor has to take military control of the world, maybe it won't get overrun with undead, but it will have such restrictions and a military presence that can, I mean, in a lot of dystopian stories that you hear of, almost be worse than trying to fend for yourself out in the land of undead if you have to follow the strict codes and laws of a military or militant empire. Because the only way to stop the undead is to make sure everybody follows the rules about burning your dead or quarantining or something like that. And so, yeah, the heroes could leave, but if they do, someone else is going to have to make a much harder decision on how to control what is happening.
I like it.
Jamie, you said something that triggered an interesting thought in regard to if this is an undead force that is trying to, you know, take over the land of the living. What if there's someone who's already in the land of the living who, all right, I just got myself a new army, and takes control over it. That could certainly start shaking the world.
Yeah.
You know, not just this incursion, but they came with their own intents and their own desires, and suddenly they are puppets on a string for someone else.
Yeah. All right. So we have, I feel like we have really, like, I could take this and just start running at this point, but we've got to have that sort of climactic transition from adventure into champion tier. And Mark's kind of discussion really put an idea in my head. What if, as the heroes start to see this change where people are starting to be taken away or beachheads are starting to be established, whatever the change in modus operandi of the undead that happens, I love the idea of the fog rolling in to surround a city. The city doesn't have fog in it. It kind of hits the walls and stops. And this city becomes under siege by the fog and the undead army. And that's the transition from epic into... That's the transition from champ... Nah, I can't say it. That's the transition from adventurer into champion tier. Suddenly now it's not this big threat, but our focus here is going to be on this very... Hey, this is the city that you now have to defend from this incursion.
It's a big issue, but we have to deal with what's right in front of us.
Mm-hmm.
For our own survival. Yeah, I like that.
Going off Mark's thing, that's when the vampires start coming into the city and the mummies start getting raised. And
see, that's where I would put it in a Grey Tomb, where maybe it surrounds Grey Tomb and you're trying to prevent the fog from getting to the actual necropolis to release more and more powerful undead. Or the Dragon Empire and Eclaira, it surrounds it and it's going to put the priestess down. We got to do something. And they're, you know, the clerics are just being able to keep it out of the mm-hmm. gates and, you know, the sewers or wherever it's trying to sneak in, and you get sent out to try to deal with it, break the siege.
Yeah.
It's always important, I think, to remind the PCs that they don't have to deal with everything on their own. And so the idea that the city is under siege and can hold, but you need the PCs to go out and make the first push or break the siege or stop the final ritual is good or is necessary to help the PCs then feel important. It's this fine line of like, the world is not resting on your PC's shoulders, but without them, it doesn't look good. Because I know for myself, but even for some of my players, when they're looking at the fact that they have a whole town that might suffer because of their decision, they often get stuck then in, well, what do? We can't save anybody. And it's good to remind them, no, and you don't always have to save everyone, but if you do nothing, it will be worse.
Yes.
And that might be that climactic battle that transitions out of adventure into champion, where the PCs are the heroes that are rallying the troops, and they have to be there. They have to be the ones doing the fighting. But because they're able to withstand it, then the city is established enough to be able to survive the siege, and the PCs are empowered to go and do something else.
Yeah.
And if they're completely surrounded by the fog, then maybe it's time to, as we talked about it in our last episode, maybe it's time to introduce bits and pieces of the underworld and go delving.
Yeah. I would definitely go revisit that article that they wrote on how to run mass combats, like PC-focused mass combats. I feel like this is a perfect time to kind of bring that mechanic into the game.
So Nick, you're saying if they could somehow transport this large mechanical sun to burn away the fog, they could save the city.
That sounds like a good champion tier. How do you go? You have to go find it. You have to go steal it and bring it back up to the surface. And then what are you going to do? Because you have two suns.
That's right. Well, any final thoughts on this? Like, what are your thoughts on kind of the arc that we came up with? Is this something you would even want to run like an undead focused game?
I think it's a great platform to launch off of. I mean, I'm sitting here thinking this would be something I could see myself running and really enjoying it. And this is something I can see myself playing in and really enjoying. I'm curious to see where we end up taking it in the next two tiers.
I think it's a classic story. So if you have new players who are unsure about this whole role-playing thing, you can say, well, here's a very classic tale of fighting the skeletons or fighting the zombies that you've seen in plenty of media.
Mm-hmm.
Here's your chance to be the hero in that story and do the smart thing and not go out into the darkness by yourself, but instead rise above and succeed.
I like that. I like that this does feel sort of like a really good transition for people. Like, hey, you could say, listen, you've seen horror movies. You've probably thought I would do something different in that situation. That's what role-playing is. Welcome to the game.
Yeah. You've yelled at the screen when they've walked into the, you know, shed with all the old knives and shovels. Okay, this time you don't have to do that.
Yep. I'd run it. I'd play in it. When do we start?
Well, I mean, you guys are running the iconic campaigns, so, you know, here you go. So we'll start off champion tier, kind of where we left off here. If you like these random encounters, please comment on our website, leave us a note, shoot us an email. If you plan on stealing this and running it, go with our blessing, let us know how it goes, and we'll do another one of these random encounters where we kind of sketch out what we would do for our champion tier arc in this undead outbreak setting. So we'll be back in 2 weeks with another new episode of Iconic, and we will see you then. And if you'd like to support the show, you can do so by becoming a patron at patreon.com/iconicpodcast. Well, you've been listening to the Iconic Podcast.
If you have any questions, comments, or feedback, you can contact us at iconicpodcast@gmail.com or call and leave a voicemail at 720-924-1706.
And be sure to check out iconicpodcast.com for news, updates, and new episodes.
Thanks for listening.